Executives care first and foremost about their time. We all have the same amount of time, but their time is very precious and very limited.
Welcome to the Quotable Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Michalitzi. Today I'm sitting down with Lisa Magnuson in beautiful Portland, Oregon. Lisa is the CEO and founder of Topline Sales. She's also the author of The Top Seller Advantage. And today we're going to talk about getting those large deals and really finding the right executives and working with them to develop that relationship. Let's jump into it. So Lisa, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So Lisa, before we jump into it, would you share a little bit about yourself?
Of course. I've spent really my whole career in sales, and I just love the profession of sales. And most of that career, including the last 14 years as a sales consultant, has been focused around getting large deals. And so that's really my expertise and my niche is helping my clients land their biggest deals.
Which is very much centered around the executives, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
There's almost always an executive. When you're talking about a large deal, and by large, that means different things to different companies. I mean, it can be anywhere from $250,000 to this year, I helped one of my clients land a $40 million deal. But there is almost always an executive sponsor involved at that level.
And I know from reading your book, The Top Seller Advantage, as I was going through, one of the stories you were telling was a very large deal that they thought they had it in the bag, but the executive they were working with was not the final decision maker, and they hadn't identified that.
Yes. And, you know, executives aren't easy to get to. And if you do get to them, what I found is that salespeople don't really think through how to leave that door open.
Okay.
And that's the reason why I wrote that book, is because, you know, you need an executive sponsor when you're talking about big deals. But an executive sponsor is not a once and done meeting.
Right.
It's a relationship that you have with that executive where if things start to go awry, you can call that person and ask them for help. Or you can call and ask them for advice on any number of things. So the whole notion of cultivating executives appropriately over time is the reason that I wrote the book. And yes, it happens frequently that sales teams, account teams don't have an executive sponsor, and that comes back to bite them in the end. Or maybe they thought they had an executive sponsor and that person either wasn't quite high enough in the organization or wasn't the right person. There was somebody else. And that also can come back to bite you in the end.
Right. And trying to establish that relationship with an executive or sustain it is very different than I think what sales reps tend to think nowadays, where, you know, you're just sharing a little bit of content here and you're just kind of keeping the pipe warm as you go. It's a very different approach to build that relationship and sustain it.
Well, executives care first and foremost about their time. We all have the same amount of time, but their time is very precious and very limited. One of the executives that I interviewed as part of the book said it perfectly. He said, you know, I am scheduled from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., barely have time for bathroom breaks. And so to get some of their time, you have to add value. And value is not introducing yourself. It's not talking about your products and services. It's not trying to sell them. Value is sharing something that they might not know, or recognizing one of their people, maybe that you work with. Maybe it's an existing customer and you work with people in their organization, and letting them know that those people are doing a good job is valuable to them. Or it could be you have customers in a similar industry and you've done some really good things for them, maybe some cutting edge things. Well, sharing those with that executive is valuable. They want to know what's happening in their industry. They want to know what other companies are doing that's cutting edge. They want to know about their employees, if they're doing good work. They want to know if you're making a difference in their organization. Those kinds of things are valuable. And it's funny because in the book, at the end of almost every chapter, I include an executive interview. And basically, I ask them, not the same question, but it ends up being really the same question, which is really, why would you take a meeting with a salesperson? What would make that meeting valuable? And why would you meet with them again? What would cause you to meet with them again? They tell, you know, they say what would make the meetings valuable. And it's like, you know, they spell it out. And one of the things that they say is end the meeting early. Don't ever go over your allocated time.
Right.
So it just gets back to that, you know, being super sensitive to their time, providing value for the time that you do have. And then as you're planning for the meeting, which of course you're going to do extensive pre-call planning for any executive meeting,
right,
you're thinking about how do I leave the door open? So you're not leaving that to chance. You're thinking about how you're going to set that up.
Right. But now, how do you find the right executive?
I think finding the right executive isn't that difficult. So if you have, you know, especially in the world that I live in, which is big deals, generally the account teams know who the executive sponsor is. So if their products or services fall within operations, the executive is probably going to be the chief operations officer.
Mm-hmm.
If it falls within IT, it's going to be the chief technology officer, the chief information officer. And if their client is a huge company, like a Fortune 50 company, then it's probably going to be a level or two below that ultimate person, you know, that,
right,
that would be their executive sponsor. You know, it's really just that person that whatever you're trying to do, it's going to impact their organization. It's going to impact their priorities. That's the person at the top of the food chain who needs to be your executive sponsor and to understand what you're trying to do to help them.
Right. The concept of always be delivering value or always be bringing value, even if there isn't already a deal on the table. Like, I think that's been a consistent theme across all of the interviews that we've done on Quotable. So if I'm getting ready for my conversation with an executive, obviously you said extensive planning is needed. What do I need to be doing? How do I need to plan for it?
That's a great question. And I have a very strong answer to that question. All of my clients will at this point be laughing because I am such an advocate of pre-call planning for every call. And what I tell my clients is pre-call planning is a concept that can be sized. So there's the 15-minute version that you might just do yourself and you think through the call and you maybe take some notes on your phone or whatever. There's maybe the 30-minute version that maybe you do with your sales manager, one of your colleagues, your coworkers, and you kind of just draft out what that call needs to look like. And then there's the hour plus version. And if you're going to call in an executive, that's the version you're going to be using.
Right.
So you're going to gather the whole account team and you're really going to engage in a very formal pre-call planning thought process. And when I ask salespeople and sales leaders, you know, when I say pre-call planning, how do you define that? What does that mean to you? You know, you'll get all different kinds of answers. And the most common answer is they believe that pre-call planning is just doing research. So that's the most common answer of what is pre-call planning. It's doing research.
Right, but that's more building your foundation. That's
absolutely
not planning for the specific call.
You're exactly right. Now, if you haven't built that foundation, or even if you have and it's an executive call, you're going to want to refresh that research. So what's happening? Is there any recent news, any recent LinkedIn information on the person you're going to be calling on or any other common contacts? So there's absolutely a research component, but you're right. That's kind of table stakes,
right,
you know?
Right.
But so when I say pre-call planning, what it involves is really thinking through, you know, who's going to be on that call? What is their disposition towards you and your company? And are there other people that should be on the call? So you kind of think through their side. Then you think through your side. So who's going to be on the call from your side and who else might add value to that call? And kind of think of, you know, the people on your side of the table. Then really thinking through what are the customer's goals for this meeting? Not their big goals, their company goals, their department goals, their project goals. What are their goals for this meeting? What would make this a great meeting for them? Really put yourself in their shoes. And I find that account teams really have a hard time doing that. You know, they can't get out of their own shoes.
Right.
And to really think about it, like, As an example, you know, the customer goals might just be to learn a little bit more, or they might be trying to shape their criteria to make a decision, or maybe they want enough information to compare you to some other options they're thinking of. So really putting yourself in their shoes and thinking through, what do they want to accomplish? And then you think through, what do you want to accomplish? Well, those two things can't be at odds. And so often I'll ask a team, you know, what do you want to accomplish? What are your goals for this call? And they'll go, well, we want to close for this or close for that. And then I have them think through what the customer wants to accomplish. And that's not where the customer is at all.
Right.
They might have very different goals for the meeting. So then you have to reconcile those two things. Then after that, really just thinking through, what are the desired next steps after the meeting? It's very different than the goals. And I have teams think through what would be best, next best, in some cases third best. And by thinking through those sort of options, the team isn't just focused on one thing. You know, they know what will be best as a next step, but if that doesn't work out, they can go to that second, you know, second best or third best. And then thinking through what could go wrong. And what are they going to do, either proactively or reactively? And I'll do this in my training sessions. I'll say to the group, hey, tell me what's the worst thing that could go wrong. And hopefully, you know, if you're planning for an executive meeting, you're not just thinking of anything that could go wrong. You're thinking of specifically knowing that account, and maybe even you've called on that executive before, what could go wrong specifically for this meeting. And then thinking through, and I'll give you an example of something that people don't think about. So what could go wrong is the executive doesn't show. They delegate the meeting to somebody else.
Okay,
so now maybe they had that experience before.
Right.
So what's plan B? Well, plan B might be, why don't you create the agenda so the executive has a role on the agenda? So they're going to be speaking about something appropriate. If their name is on the agenda and they're going to be speaking, they're probably going to be there.
Right.
There's almost nothing that you can think about that could go wrong that you can't try to at least mitigate. And by thinking through it, you really are assuring that that call is going to go great. And then after you do sort of all of that analysis, then only then do you put together your agenda. And the agenda is, in my mind, you should always have an agenda for a call, whether you send that, you know, as a Word document, or just an email, or maybe it's an agenda that you just have in your notebook and you don't share. I don't recommend that. But, you know, some people go, well, my customers don't like agendas. It's like, okay. I think most people do. But regardless, you know, so there's levels of casual versus formal. But, you know, you really are in a great position to put together an agenda after you've thought through all of that stuff. And, you know, it sounds like a lot. But if you do that, you're going to have a great call.
Yeah. I have friends who kind of like to avoid thinking, you know, worst case scenario, but what you're saying makes total sense, because if I hadn't taken the time to think about it and there's a chance the exec wouldn't show, if I don't use the opportunity before the meeting to really try and mitigate that, or, you know, hopefully prevent it from happening entirely.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've missed an incredible opportunity there.
Yeah, and there's a lot more. Like, I work with my clients on great questions to set up a meeting, you know, and one of the questions is sending the agenda in advance, or as you're talking to the client about the next meeting, just saying, you know, here's what we're thinking, here's who we're thinking of bringing from our organization, who is going to be there from your organization, which opens the door to say, well, maybe we should include this other person as well. And so a lot of times, in a sales scenario, you want to meet other people. It might not even be the executive. You might want to meet a counterpart or a department or a resource or whatever. And by setting up the meeting with really good questions, you collaboratively just say, oh, well, should we include so-and-so from IT or so-and-so from HR or so-and-so from marketing? Because, it might be really good to cover this topic. And so you're just sort of setting up the meeting for success in a collaborative manner. If you do it that way, the customer's not feeling like you're trying to go over their head or go to places that are inappropriate. You're collaborating with them on the most highest and best use of their time and your time.
Right. And having the right people in the room. I mean, I've been in a couple roles over the years where I would explain it as pretty much one person has the ability to say yes and green light it, but there are probably about 30 people involved who have a chance to veto and, and derail what you're doing. And if they're not involved in that process, then it becomes a train wreck pretty quickly.
Yeah. And we all know, you know, we've seen the statistics of how many people are involved in the decision process for corporate sales. And that statistic continues to go up.
Yep.
So I think it was 5.8 and now it's 6.9. I don't have those numbers exactly right.
But I think it's gotten higher than that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It just keeps going up and up because there's more people don't want to own risk, you know, on their own. And there's more people involved, want to have a say in what's occurring because it touches usually more departments, no matter what your products or services are. It's just kind of the world that we live in now. So that number is just going to continue to increase, which means that effective meetings are going to have to include more of those people, both decision makers and stakeholders. So you've got to plan for that.
Right.
You have to plan for your success. And I've seen countless statistics that talk about sales call effectiveness. And the bottom line number is you can increase your sales call effectiveness by 20% if you consistently use a formal pre-call planning thought process. That's pretty good. We all want 20% more sales.
Oh, totally. Totally. So now, if I'm looking at a company and, you know, I've got that call, maybe that call is set up, I know, you know, just from my conversations with them that there may be an opportunity here. There is a challenge they have that I can help with. I know sometimes finding that compelling event or that reason why they need to make a change now can be a challenge. Is there an approach you recommend, especially when dealing with, you know, these kind of large deals where you're maybe fundamentally trying to shift, you know, how the company does business or some aspect of their business?
Yeah, absolutely. I get this question and we work through this question a lot with the account teams that I work with. And an aspect of the question that you asked is, when you are planning for very large deals, you're doing a lot of strategic account planning. There's a lot of things that you're doing there. You're doing maybe SWOT analysis. You're doing relationship maps. You're doing competitive analysis. You know, there's a lot of things that you're doing. But those things are not independent of the sales process that you have for your company.
Okay.
And so they're feathered into the normal sales process. So, you know, if you think of a sales process, maybe it starts with lead and then it goes to suspect and then it goes to prospect and then it might go to discovery and then it might go to proposal, present, might go to, you know, negotiate, then close. You know, that's probably a good representative sample. Oops, I forgot qualify, the most important stage. I just worked with a customer on their sales process and they didn't have qualify. And I really had to think about that. It's because they had their world of prospects was very defined.
Okay.
So they actually just, you know, some of those things were moved into the other stages. But getting back to your question really falls into the qualify stage. If you're wanting to find out if there's a compelling event, you're wanting to see if your project is really real, is there some sort of timeline, why would they make this change, is this something that they would be open to, it's somewhere in that kind of qualify stage because you want to know if it's viable before
right.
you go forward. And in my world, there's kind of three things that are happening to solve for how can you kind of create a project, but also see if it's viable. One is you do the strategic planning to sort of get the ideas going, to see what strategy you might want to kind of employ. Then you go back to your sales process. And if you are, in fact, at the qualify stage, it's like, what are those questions at qualify? What are those characteristics? What are the sales resources associated with qualify? And then you're doing your pre-call planning and you're pulling all that into the plan.
Okay.
So you're pulling those questions in, and questions might be, you know, have you ever considered this type of project? We've seen it really work effectively for companies like yours. You know, maybe the project's already being considered. You know, has this been designated as a project? Do you have a timeline? Have you thought about initial budget? You know, those are all qualifying questions to really kind of nail down, Are they interested? And is there a little more than just interest there? And are you going to move forward? So I know that sounds like a lot. If you're in a simple sales cycle, it's not. You just go to your sales process and you follow that and you do good pre-call planning. But if you're in a more complex, longer-term sales cycle, you don't forget about those fundamentals. I guess that's my point.
Right. I mean, I can imagine if you haven't worked those questions in and really tried to make sure that this was the right time, not just, you know, that there was a potential there. That's a long sales cycle. You could be chasing a company for a considerable amount of time that isn't ready for you, or it isn't the right time for them.
And that happens all day long. You know, when I engage with account teams with my war room work, you know, and we sit down, that's one of the first questions that I ask. Where are you in the sales process? You know, are you in discovery? Are you in proposal present? Are you in qualify? And a lot of times this just happened with a client a couple of weeks ago. We were working on a kind of a prospect plan, and we started with, where are you in the sales process? And they said, we're in early discovery. So we started to talk about, okay, what's the customer doing, thinking, feeling? What kind of questions do you need to ask? What's your next steps? You know, all that stuff. Well, as we started to talk about it, they weren't in early discovery at all. They were in qualify.
Oh, gosh.
Everything's different in qualify than early discovery. And so we had to sort of go, good thing we figured that out.
Yeah.
So we go back and, okay, now we're in qualify. So now we're going to ask different questions where the customer is going to be doing, thinking, feeling different things. You know, we're going to plan differently for that next call. And so it makes a big difference to know where you are in your sales process and where you're going. It's like a compass. You have to be able to navigate through that. It's what you're doing at different points in that journey is very different.
Right.
So you have to get it right.
I want to back up a little bit. We were talking before about how difficult it is to reach the executives. Are there times that are better for it?
Absolutely. I have found that there are windows of opportunities when it comes to executive access. You know, this certainly isn't absolute, but executives are more open to meetings and to conversations prior to a project, prior to a sales cycle starting, and after. So at the beginning stages, they are very open to what could change that might support their goals or priorities,
right.
What problems could be fixed that in support of their goals or priorities. They're interested in how much it's going to cost, and not just dollars, resources, time of their people.
Mm-hmm.
They're interested in all of those things. They're interested that the right resources are allocated to the right projects. So conversations at that point are usually well received. And
okay.
So, and they're not selling conversations. They're really trying to get on the same page with that executive and talk about those things that he or she is concerned with. Resources, investments, ROI, impact, change management. Those are all things that executives would be interested in before they really sanction a project in their organization. Then they're going to delegate it.
Right.
So going through the sales process or as you're implementing whatever it is you're doing, you know, there might be updates. And one of the things that I recommend if you're engaging that executive at the beginning, when that window's open, to ask them what would be appropriate in terms of keeping in touch with you as we're going through this process. And they'll tell you.
Right.
I'll get updates from my managers, or you can email very brief updates throughout. You know, they'll tell you exactly what's appropriate.
Right.
And then do what they say. But then at the end, there's another window of opportunity because they want to know if they're getting that impact that they thought they were going to get. So when you finish your through your sales cycle, you get your contract, you implement, and you start to see results, that's the other window.
Right.
When you can really share, it's like, you know, that project that you sanction, here's the results, here's the impact. Also, that's an opportunity to recognize their people that have done a really good job.
Right.
Implementing or executing on whatever it is that you're doing. As I mentioned before, executives really appreciate that, as do those people. They might not get that kind of exposure any other way.
Right.
So those two windows are just, you don't want to miss those windows.
Yeah.
They're high quality interactions. They're not selling interactions, and you're setting the stage. And then once you sort of have that, then you decide, okay, how, you know, what's the appropriate way to keep the conversation going? And again, the best way is just to ask, how can we stay in touch? Our company has events for executives. Is that something that you would be interested in?
Right.
Whatever it is. You know, the account team can meet before and sort of decide what they think is best in terms of options. But you want to establish those options, and then you just calendarize them.
Yeah, but you don't want to miss that opportunity.
You don't want to miss. You know, and I usually recommend 4 touch points a year, at least 1 in person, if 2 if you can get it. You know, maybe an executive exchange, an annual executive exchange, an annual planning meeting, that kind of thing. Usually executives will be open to that if you've set that up properly. Sometimes you can get that and maybe some executive entertainment or an exec to an exec kind of conversation.
Right.
And then the other 2 touch points could be soft, you know, an email update, you know, something that's interesting to them. But I recommend 4 touch points a year to really stay kind of top of mind with that executive so that the next time that you want to engage on a new project, they know who you are and they have a favorable view of what, who you are and what you can do for them.
I know for 2019, you've been doing research into, you know, what priorities executives have. Would you be willing to share some of what you found?
Yeah, absolutely, Kevin. I am working on my next book, and it's going to be a sales leadership playbook. So the target audience for that book is going to be sales leaders, VPs of sales, chief revenue officers, directors of sales, those types of folks, and their teams. So, and their teams of sales managers. And what I have been doing this year is I interviewed over 40 sales leaders, live interviews, to really ask them about, you know, what are their goals? What are their challenges when they think of sales leadership, sales managing new account acquisition, managing existing accounts? You know, what are the things inside of that that are really important to them? And then I asked them about how valuable or not it would be to have sort of a playbook that they could reference as they were going through their days.
Right.
I just finished with that, publishing those findings, and it was interesting. So a couple of things, and I thought I was very in tune with sales leaders. I've been a sales VP myself multiple times. Sales VPs are my clients. Those are the ones I work with, and I ran a sales VP mastermind group for the last 4 years. So I felt like I was about as in touch as you could get. But what I learned with these interviews is that when I asked them about their top 3 priorities, there was 24 distinct priorities. So if you looked at the whole group, I blended the ones that were the same. So of the group of 41 interviewees, 24 distinct priorities. Obviously, revenue achievement was in everybody's top 3.
Right.
But then I asked them about their top 3 challenges. Well, there was twice as many challenges as there were priorities.
Wow.
More than twice. And so I just found that was surprising to me, because what that means is these VPs of sales, as they're going after their priorities, the 24, with revenue being for sure one of the top 3 for everybody, they're dealing with over 50 challenges.
Right.
So that's a little crazy.
Yeah. So I hear you saying sales is even more difficult, less resources, less time, and more that has to get done.
Absolutely. You know, when they talked about their challenges, it was, you know, in some cases, market conditions, in some cases, change management, and how do you get things to happen within your organization from a change standpoint, culture issues, time management, which wouldn't come as a surprise to anybody. Co-worker relationships, you know, having to work with other departments to get sales done, but how hard that is.
Right.
So there's all these challenges. So yeah, I guess the aha was, you know, I always knew the job was hard. I've done the job. It's getting harder. It's a tough, tough job. You know, these VPs, they're carrying that revenue banner. They're charging the hill. They're hoping their team's behind them and they get to the top and pick it back up and do it over again the next month. And at the same time, they're just dragging all of these problems with them.
Any insights from them? Anyone who's found ways to deal with these challenges?
My interviews that I did, what I really wanted to find out was, would a sales leadership playbook help them?
Okay.
So different than a sales playbook.
Right.
And so it was interesting because almost all of them have sales playbooks, mm-hmm. you know, for their salespeople. Delineate the stages, all the stuff that we talked about earlier.
Right.
But very few of them have sales leadership playbooks, playbooks that would help them and their managers manage the business, manage the sales organization.
Right.
And so what I found out is, yes, a book like that would be enormously helpful for them. I also got a lot of input about what that would look like and how it would be valuable for them, which really changed my thinking about the book that I was going to write. So I am going to write the Sales Leadership Playbook, but I'm also going to make templates available that they can access and customize because that's what they really want.
Okay.
You know, the generic is good, having some place to, you know, if they're going to put together a sales recognition program, having a place to go look at what good looks like,
right.
you know, but then they want a template because they want to make it their own.
And who wants to reinvent?
And they don't want to, they don't yeah. have time to reinvent because they've got all those challenges.
Yeah. It's so true.
So yes, that will come out in late 2019. I'm super excited to write okay. that book.
Why don't we back up a little bit and talk about win themes? That was one area that you and I have talked about preparation for this that we really haven't covered. And I think it'll help round everything out for us.
Yeah. So win themes are a concept that I developed years and years ago. And it really has resonated with the salespeople that I've worked with over the years. And what win themes are, they are the intersection of the client's priorities and the strengths that your products and services or your company has.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that intersection. And I think the reason why they've really resonated with people is because win themes are different than an elevator pitch. They're different than a value prop. They are different than features and benefits. They are unique to every client. And they are the themes that the customer wants to talk about. They start with the customer's priorities, and you are aligning only those strengths that align with their priorities. And when you get that intersection right, that's where the customer wants to talk to you.
Right.
And so it's a simple concept, but it has so many applications. And I'll give you an example. If you have the type of business where you have to be involved with requests for proposals or RFPs, it would be terrible to go into that process without carefully developing your win themes before.
Right.
And, you know, I'll give you a client example. I had a client that they did very professional jobs in their RFP responses, but they were, you know, sort of boilerplate responses that they plugged in answers to the in answer to the customer questions, super professional, and they have proposal resources that kind of customize them a little bit to that customer. If you're really wanting to differentiate your response, that response is going to come off as professional but not differentiated. But if you sit down and go, okay, what are the three is a good number. What are the three win themes? Their priorities are strengths. Every single answer to every question they ask touches on one of those three win themes with evidence like examples, statistics, anything, stories.
Right.
Then that's a differentiated response. And for this customer that I was working with, millions of dollars meant the difference of millions of dollars in their proposal response, which was very different than how they had done it before. And they were very concerned whether they were going to win or not.
Right.
And I believe win themes, and they believe win themes made the difference between winning and not winning. Same thing with a smaller proposal, certainly a presentation. If you're going to do a presentation or a demo, you've got to start with the win themes.
Right.
Otherwise, you're just going to telling them about what you have. Even if you talk about the benefit to them, it may not necessarily be a priority.
Yeah.
Just that concept is really important. And you can also certainly talk about that when you're doing your pre-call planning. If you're at the later stages in the sales process, you can, you know, and you're planning for a call, it's like, what are our win themes? What win themes have we developed?
Right.
And if you're at the earlier stages, you can start to ask them about their priorities. So you can start to formulate those win themes.
Because if you have those three themes, you're not just submitting a generic proposal. You're personalizing it. And even if in that first meeting, like, you know, I'm picturing, you know, the team you were working with going into that meeting, even if you don't have it 100% accurate, it's clear you're making the effort to understand it. And I think that makes such a difference.
You are so right. Simple concept. Take some discipline to take the time to do that before presentation, before proposal,
right,
before meetings, but so worth it.
Yeah, such an impact.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make sure I ask you our lightning round question.
Uh-oh, now I'm nervous.
If you could take all the knowledge and experience you have now, go back to the beginning of your career and give yourself one piece of advice, what would you tell yourself?
Well, I don't know if you've had any guests do this, Kevin, but I'm going to turn the question around to you. What do you think that I would say?
What do I think you would say? I would say that it's incredibly important to understand who is involved in a particular deal and understand what motivates them, what their priorities are. But I could be very far off the mark.
No, you are right. But what I would add to that is pre-call planning.
Okay.
And so in your pre-call planning, you're exactly right. You put yourself in your customer's shoes. You understand their priorities. You're trying to get those win themes right. But just the discipline and the practice around pre-call planning, that's the game changer. And I've had clients ask me that. Three or four years ago, I was working with a tech company out of the Bay Area, and they asked me the same question. I did a ton of work for them over the course of a year, and they said, if you could just say one thing you think would make the biggest difference, and I answered that question the exact same way, pre-call planning. And the reason why is because that's where the rubber meets the road.
Right.
That's where you are talking to the customer, you're having the meeting, you're either aligned with them or not.
Mm-hmm.
And that alignment doesn't happen unless you plan for it.
Right.
Or at least it might not happen if you don't plan for it. And so that, to me, pre-call planning is a game changer.
Right. And it takes so much time and energy to get that call.
Yes, it does, especially now.
Right.
People don't answer their phone. They don't answer emails. They don't want to give you their time. Absolutely. When you get that meeting, why wouldn't you go through? And again, pre-call planning can be sized. It can be 15 minutes.
Yep.
But just that thought process, not just the research, but the whole thought process is gold.
I love it. Lisa, this has been fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more conversations like this, visit quotable.com.